Episode 145. Glenn Hanlon, Head Coach HCB Südtirol.
I like coming in the morning and being around my players. I like talking to my players. I like thinking about going home and thinking about what we talked about. And I enjoy being in with the staff, and I enjoy being in the rink, and I do all those things. It's not really something I occupy my mind with and going doing all these other things. So I really didn't be part of the process and say, as beautiful as this place is and as gorgeous as Italy is and how unbelievably fascinating every single area of this beautiful country is, I don't really use that as my motivator to come back. I wanted to come back here because of hockey.
Win today, hockey. Oh,
in diesem Augenblick wird es jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie. Yeah. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren. Nice move, another nice move. Oh, it's gone. Oh, what a goal. It doesn't get any better than this.
If someone would have told me a week ago that I'd be in his office talking to him in person, I probably would have said, you're nuts, but it is really happening. I'm here in Bolzano. Opposite of me is head coach Glenn Hanlon, who coached HCB Südtirol Alperia last week to be runner-up champions. He's the new old coach. And Coach Hanlon, I'm so happy that you're jumping on Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, this has become an annual, I guess, now. So it's second time in 2 years. It's great to be back. And it's funny, when you're not involved in the game, you get a little rusty at everything, from trying to express yourself in interviews to run the video machines to knowing where all the things are to get yourself ready for practice. And I found myself going out without certain things, and I think I'm only responsible for a whistle, a stick, a pair of gloves, and that's about it. I think I forgot two of the three, so I'm glad today is over.
I guess we'll get the expressing yourselves or yourself in interviews part out of the way fairly quickly. Actually, it's the second time this year. I think we did have the honor of talking to each other in February at length. Already, this time around in person, and this time around at an interesting part of the year, October, where teams are rounding into shape, trying to collect points that will be vital for ending up in the top six or that will help them in the pre-playoff race. If I had told you 1.5 months ago that you'd be sitting in Bolzano at the beginning of October, what would you have answered?
Oh, no, for sure, no. There was a lot of things that went on behind the decisions and the scenes from the last game, and it was all myself. It was all induced, and it was all motivated for the right reasons. At the end of the year, we had a great discussion and with Dr. Knoll and everyone that was involved, and I made it clear at the start that I didn't see myself being able to come back. I had a really important family situation, for my son. It was a graduation, and there were some things that there was a kind of a checklist of things that he needed to do at 21 years old to get himself ready for his next steps in life. And I had asked him, and my wife had asked him, he said, if this was near the end of the season, do you want us there? And we didn't want to tell him that we were coming back or not coming back, because if he knew I was automatically, say I was coming back, he wouldn't say anything. We just said, yeah, he said, that'd be great if you could be there. And that was all on September the 28th. So it prevented me from going back. It's the first time in my whole life I haven't done the selfish thing and just automatically just went and made a hockey decision. And it felt really good. Like, it felt really, really good. Like, it felt right. And, I hate, as you grow in different stages of your life, a lot of the things I don't like about this stage of life. But the one thing is that you sort of see the whole picture a little more clear. And I'm just happy with the decision. It worked out great. But now I'm ready to go.
And that's one part that a lot of people don't see, like being a coach, being a player, being away for such long amounts or big amounts of time and missing out on a couple of things. How did you try to spend summer? And I mean, spoiler alert, we of course have to talk about the finals and we'll get that out,
out
of your system too. But how did you spend your summer?
Well, I love fishing. And as most kids, they don't want to do what their parents want to do. And last winter, my son just fell in love with fishing. It wasn't even, he was out doing it. And he just said, Dad, we gotta go do this. And I've said all along, I said, when you're ready to go camping, ready to go fishing, I said, I'll be there. So we had three fabulous trips where we're out and, you know, there's no, obviously no cell service or phones, and you're out there camping and fishing, and you get to spend 5 days three times in the summer, you know, three groups of 5 days with a 21-year-old, that's just like a blessing. Like I couldn't wish for anything better. So, you know what, that was just absolutely fantastic. But I think at the end of the third trip, he was ready to get rid of me. So we're all happy.
Well, he's 21, so
yeah,
I guess it's pretty natural.
He's better than me when I was that age, that's for sure.
I mean, if we dig into biology and then all the chemistry processes that go on, there are certain hormones that start coming out at 17, 18, 19 that were made to encapsulate you from your parents. So it's natural.
Yeah, well, I think his started at about 14. So I think he went through the haywire stages early, and now we're rocking and rolling. So it's pretty neat, to be honest with you.
I think last time around we were able to talk extensively. You said there's hardly a day that goes by where you don't think about the game of hockey, as it's been such a big part of your life, your career, your coaching career. How many days during summer, or maybe during those fishing trips, were spent by you without thinking about hockey?
Yeah, Martin, you know, I purposely have to force myself, when I know I wasn't going back, purposely just force myself not to think about it and not to, you know, watch tape, break down tapes, watch NHL games, go through them, do all those things. I just said, look, you're not going anywhere until likely November. Just stay focused on the moment and don't do it. So to put an exact number, I think there still becomes parts of the days where, like, it's really hard. Like, if I've spent a lot of years, my whole adult life living in Vancouver, just outside of Vancouver. So there's a, you know, from actually playing there and coaching there for, I think, a total around 13, 14 years, there's quite a few opportunities, not with my closer friends, but on the periphery, like either at the golf club or something, they always want to talk hockey. So you're talking and giving an opinion and tell me, are the Canucks, are they going to win, and all of these things. And then that just kind of triggers them some thinking. So you get back home and check out some tapes or do some things. So it's you know, what was really interesting. There's a Netflix show called I don't know the exact name, but it's like something about living to 100, and it's life in the blue zone, something to that effect. And they studied all of these people from five different areas that had a lot of centenarians, like the highest number per capita of people over 100. And there was a lot of common threads, a lot we can almost figure it out without watching the show: diet, stress, you know, conditioning, all of these things. But the one thing that was really important is that you needed to have a purpose. And you had to have a purpose. And I even, you know, they were interviewing people that were like 98 years old, 100 years old. They still had something to get up for every single morning. And you look at these people and they look like they're like 60 years old, but they had a purpose. And it got me to thinking, you know, I without hockey, I don't have a purpose. You know what I mean? I don't have a real purpose. And I'm not proud of that. You know, yes, we should, you know, and that purpose can be charity work. It can be giving back to the community, some of those things. I think I've been too self-centered in a lot of my thinking. And so right now, my real purpose is hockey. I have to find more to it because I know I can't do this forever. But for right now, this is what it is. So that once I started watching that, like, yeah, I was really driven to get back and get at it and start studying and not trying to avoid it.
So you thought for yourself, November might be the time where you start wrapping your head around
because
the idea of coaching again. But it happened a little earlier. How come?
November, excuse me. I said November because I wanted to give myself a buffer. I didn't want to tell people, look, I can come back at the end of September. There was a couple of other things. It's not for anyone's things. There was a couple other things that were part of this decision. There was about three things that went into this decision. The one I'm happy to talk about, but the other two, and they weren't bad, and there wasn't anything very serious, but everything had to fall. The stars had to be just aligned perfectly for everything to be taken care of by the end of September. If it didn't, I didn't want to say to somebody, yeah, I can come, and then all of a sudden I can't come. So I thought at least at the end of November, there's 100%. If things weren't correct by then, they'll never would have been correct, and I would have had to figure that out. But it gave me a month. And then when this came up, like everything was in order to come and do it.
Now the season Bolzano has been having could be labeled as a nightmarish season. They've already played 19 games, a lot of exhibition games, Champions Hockey League. Now the bad start to exhibition and Champions Hockey League kind of extended into the start of the regular season. How did you follow, or how did you try to catch up on everything that's happened so far?
Well, I watched the Champions League game because they were more available to me. And I was interested to see how the team would fare against other leagues. That's just out of curiosity, not. And then after that, I didn't really follow it real closely. I would look at the scores or something like that, but I wasn't spending every morning at 9, because the games would come on around 9 o'clock. Like, the early ones would come around 9 o'clock. And, like, I had stuff going on. I was at home for a reason, and I had stuff going on. So I had to continue on with my life. And so I'd watch the scores. But it wasn't like I was phoning somebody or talking with Fabio or anything. I just felt bad for the coaches. I felt bad for the fans. I felt bad for the players. And I just wanted them to win.
Of course, losing is part of the game, but no one likes to lose for extended periods of time. The last loss that happened probably stings with a lot of Bolzano fans, or still sits badly with them, because it happened against Pustatal, who happened to lead the standings. They were actually outshot by Bolzano. I think you shot at their goal in the 40s.
40 to 18 or something.
And,
yeah.
And they just shot at your goal in the teens. But after the game, the local newspaper, the Italian Dolomites, the Dolomiten Tagblatt, they labeled, or they wrote an article, and I quote, "This team needs an exorcism." How does an exorcism at the hands of Glenn Henlon look like? And it's a set of question. I'll follow up on that.
I think I can only come in and do one thing, and that's the status quo, what I've done. And it's not what I did last year. It's what I've done since 1993 when I started coaching. There's a certain characteristic to how kind of I live my life, how I approach my life, how I parent. And that's all I know. So this situation doesn't dictate to pick some sort of personality or characteristic that I don't have. So for me, it's just about coming in and doing what I did last year. I think the people that hire me saw what I do, how I work, and the players know what to expect from me. So that's about that's about it. Like, I'm getting paid to do a job. I'm getting paid to win. I mean, that's the way it is. But in the end, it's a great exercise for players. Like, when you give a percentage of the players that are returning, when you're in sports and you're in the heat of the battle and you have a lot of things going on, like you get a lot of outside things going on, when you're winning, it just snowballs. Like, you're go for a coffee and everyone's telling you how great you are, and you're reading the newspaper and everyone's telling you how great you are, and you just feel like unbelievable. Like, it's like, we're really blessed to be able to be in sports when that's happening. Like, nobody that isn't in sports are fortunate enough to get that. And how great that is, it's the very same when you're losing, except the opposite end of the spectrum. So it gets back again. We're not here to wipe the slate clean. Like, the rest of the team still keep their points. We're not coming in. We got to learn where we went wrong as individuals. Like, where did your thinking go? Where did it, you know, how did it get to this point? And it's not just come in and say, you know, okay, this is a fresh start. It's not a fresh start. Take something from this and learn. Because, you know what, if I told one of our players today, if you're lucky enough to play 14 years, and let's say you average around 60 games a year, that's a lot of periods of hockey. And there's a pretty good chance this won't be the last time you're going to lose 4 or 5 games. So, you know, keep drawing on it.
Because that always brings me back when a new coach comes in, and it brings me back to an article I read a couple of months ago. It was about when John Cooper, I think now the longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League, took over as an unknown commodity. He took over a very talented Tampa Bay Lightning team that just wasn't able to put it together. Mm-hmm. Now, similarity with Bolzano on paper, the core is still there, very talented. Weren't able to put it together. And Steven Stamkos, in the story on The Athletic, said what he did after meeting number one is give us some swagger. How, I mean, if everybody would be able to induce swagger with teams, I guess we'd see a lot of winning programs. It's not that simple. But is there a way how you might be able to induce swagger with this team?
I think that I'm not coming in new. So that's a different situation on that. These players know what I do, how I do. So I think the first thing that I make it perfectly clear and make it clear to our new players that I'm going to have your back. I got you covered here. And that's the first thing. And then it's just a matter of time before they can build up some trust. None of these players that are new trust me. They have no reason to trust me. The players that have been here before, I don't know. You'd have to ask them individually. Some might trust me, some don't. But I really try to make sure that they can trust me. So that's the first thing I get. I don't know if developing trust is swagger.
Swagger is a pretty loose
word.
Well,
you know, it's a good word because I think it's relevant, because if you want to use football comparisons, you watch Coach Prime in Colorado. Now, there's some swagger.
Oh, boy.
You know, that's some big-time swagger. I don't have that. That's not my personality. And but he seems a natural at it. Like, he doesn't seem like this is something that he's just going to read this book on how to bring swagger. I think he walks
in. And he's got his players' backs.
And he's got their players' backs. So I don't have that. I don't know. I've got likely 30 shirts in my closet, and they're all plaid. You know what I mean? I don't have much going on.
It'd be hard to envision you on a bench wearing the gold chain or something like that.
if I could pull it off, I'd do it, but it wouldn't work. So, Martin, you know what it is? It's for me, I just try to read what the players need day to day. Try not to be too over the top. And, you know, in the end, I just want players to know, I know how hard it is. Like, we got a player here that graduated. He's taking an internship on accounting. And you're dealing with numbers. That seems like very difficult for me. But like I told him today, playing hockey is going to be the hardest thing you ever do in your life. I mean, that job being an accountant will be, no one's running your head through the boards when you, no one's yelling at you. No one's writing articles about you. No, like the whatever you go through now is the greatest teaching moments for the rest of your life. Like it'll be like on, I don't want to say on easy street. That's disrespectful for the rest, for what it is. But he's going to develop a lot of skills that he doesn't even know he's developing to take with him once he starts working full time.
The reason why I'm so glad that you're jumping on Win Today Hockey O'Clock, the podcast, is also something that we haven't really had the chance to talk about. Each and every year, I do have the distinct honor of talking to the championship-winning head coach, but hardly ever to the runner-up head coach. And you and Salzburg were able to deliver one of the greatest series we've had in recent memory and probably in league history. You were 12 minutes away from winning a championship, unbelievably so. All came down to game 7, and obviously Salzburg escaping with the championship from Bolzano. How much of closure were you already able to have and then put on the on last year?
Yeah, quite a bit. I thought the series was fantastic. I thought there was a lot of good players on the ice. I thought between our team and Salzburg, it was a very highly skilled series. I thought the refereeing was fantastic. Like I thought the referee were one of the, you know, unsung heroes of that series. I just felt that they let us play. They did a great job of handling the intensity and the pressure the players were going through. I just thought that was really good. Like it wasn't, and I thought that maybe the players should take some credit for that too, because there wasn't a lot of silliness of trying to, you know, do stupid things and to do that. But I thought the referees did a good job. Thinking about it, you know, the first night, you're kind of like, why me? Like, why can't I get that? Why can't that happen to me? Why can't, you know, really selfish, like really selfish with so much else going on in the world. And I'm like, this is the most devastating thing that, like, get serious, you know, get a grip. You know what I mean? I just had a great experience and went to bat. Now, I don't want to say yet. I don't like to use sports as a comparison for war when war is real and lives are lost. We just had some really good battles. They're really well coached. They have a great coaching staff. And it was a lot of fun trying to kind of match wits and, you know, make the odd little adjustment and, you know, try to make sure that we could keep their power play in check and then try to beat their great penalty kill. And it was just a lot of fun, Mark, really a lot of fun.
So are there indeed the five stages of grief for coaches after losing out on a championship too?
Oh, there's five beer, I think, but I don't know what five stages. No, you know what? I think the one thing about working in Europe is when you're over here, you're more in the news. You're more like, if you're living in Bolzano, like for our guys like Frankie and Friege and all of the Italian players that stay here, they have to deal with it all summer long. You know, like they people say, oh, that's too bad, or how did that happen, or whatever. You kind of go back home and, you know, your good friends know we're there. But overall, it's not, you're not exposed to it as much as what you are here. So it's a lot easier.
I want to go back to a couple of distinct moments during the series, as much as it might bring back some bad memories, but if you're kind enough to take us on the inside of what goes on in a series like this, where you're fighting for every puck, every inch of the ice for 2 weeks, and a game one that happened, or games one and two, really unusual for both teams, and then kind of fits because great battles, great defensive battles, and just one goal in each of the first two games made the difference. At what point did you think, like, Jesus, why is it good? Or, did you ever think there'd be games where more than one goal is scored after the first two? Because both goaltenders played out of their minds.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on with that question. First of all, you had two great goalies. Like, Sammy was, all world, like, just all world, all year long, like, consistent and in the playoffs, and he did a great job for us. Secondly, the teams play with a lot of structure. Like, Salzburg, they're so hard to play against. Like, they're on top of you, and they're well, like I said, their structure is good. They play a type of system that they just play it well, and they play it hard, and there's not a lot of space. So, and they have a good penalty kill. So I think we were first, and I don't know if they were second or third in the league. I don't know. So there's two teams that took pride in killing penalties, or they had personnel that knew that. So we knew goals would be at a premium. And, a couple of games we scored in groups. Like, we scored a couple of quick goals together. And I don't know. I don't, there wasn't really an answer to that, was it? I guess an answer to your question, yeah, I thought goals would be hard to come by.
Like, if you tie together the first four games of the series, Bolzano was able to score two goals.
Mm-hmm.
If I told you before the series, listen, first four games, first four games of the series, you're going to score two goals, how long do you think the series would have lasted?
Well, likely four games, but if you would have told me we're not going to score, did we score power play in the first four games? I don't think so. We didn't score eventually, but if your power play is not scoring, it's really hard. Like, it's really hard to score 5-on-5 goals, like, especially down in the finals. Like, you got two teams there, they're there for a reason. They likely play very well defensively. So, but that many goals and say we're going to win hockey games? No chance.
Salzburg takes a 3-1 lead after game four. And I vividly remember traveling from Salzburg to Bolzano that weekend, because game four happened on a Friday night. All the papers on Saturday were full of titles there for the taking. It's going to be Salzburg's party in Bolzano. And even we as broadcasters, I mean, you read all the stuff on social media and you just have the most recent games in the back of your head, and you're like, yeah, Salzburg sure does look, sure looks the part. And we were kind of prepared, of course, with our rundowns and everything, for a championship party on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But as hockey is an interesting and more often than not a funny game, obviously momentum changed. What happened in between the awesomeness of game five and you moving back, being down in the series 3-1 from Friday night to Sunday? What happened in between there?
Well, certainly nothing I said or did. I think it's just an accumulation, like, right from day one of training camp, where...
As cliche as it might sound.
Yeah, it's important. It's why the first day of your season is just as important as the last. It's just as important, you know, your 51st day of the season is just as important as the last. Like, you can't all of a sudden become a team. And, you know, we stress here, first and foremost, being a good teammate. And being a good teammate is so so many tiers and so many levels, and so, and, you know, it's very, very difficult. Like I told them, I said, you know, right from the start, like, people are going to remember more about you as a teammate, about how you were off, like, in 15 years. They're not going to remember if you, oh, yeah, so when you're sitting around, they're not going to say, oh, yeah, he was great at defensive zone coverage, or, he really knew how to neutral zone forecheck. They're going to say, boy, that guy did anything for the team. He was funny. He was full of life, or he was serious, or, man, he, you know, I needed something, he was there for me. That's what we ask our players to do. Excuse me. So, that said, that's kind of our layer. That's our foundation. So once you have that, it really helps if you have the right people come in before they get through the door. And I've been doing this so long. Sometimes personalities mesh, sometimes they don't. It's nothing against the individual. It's just the way it is. And these guys all did. And we had some real strong personalities there. Mike Delhuzen was a real strong personality, and Scotty Valentine's a strong personality. You know, players that have been there been in these situations. So I think they just kept on firing away and kept on believing in each other, and away we go. But like, it was nothing like the coaching staff. It wasn't like we changed philosophies, or we went in and had this all for one and one for all speech. It was just like from the very first day.
Because you see, as a broadcaster, you always kind of revert back to those Hollywood movies.
Yeah, but before you do that, and like, we have a really good captain. Like, we have a really good captain. Like, Frankie is just, he's unbelievable. So, sorry, first day and I'm losing my voice.
I just wanted to allude to this before. We as broadcasters in situations like these, we always try to go back to like Hollywood movies and have these big rah-rah locker room speeches that coaches are given at the whenever the team is at crossroads. And I mean, you're great with words, but you said responsibility was also with the team. You mentioned a great captain. Funnily enough, Bolzano has always had a history of great captains. Alexander Egger, all-time great. Mm-hmm. Anton Berner, all-time great. Mm-hmm. Danny Frank, on his way to becoming great captain. So that's very interesting that this kind of region just breeds great leaders. But when we specifically talk about that, the game five, after 20, after 40, after 60, after 80, after 100, was there ever a time where you kind of talk to the team differently than before? Did you try to keep it as even keel as possible in this kind of situation? How do you look back on the day now, and how did you
no, it's
did
a
you
good,
behave during intermissions?
No, I think the very same. I didn't look back. The only on those overtime and series go on, it's really kind of fun for both the players and the coaches, because you've kind of put your work in, you know, like, you've done it. Like, there's nothing, you know, maybe if something you can see a little bit, or something that you think you can maybe take an advantage of, a little bit of a system type here or there. If there's something that, you know, we have a plan, but we're not, you know, we've lost sight of this, or we're supposed to be trying to attack a certain way, but overall, You're just trying to get your players to keep on feeling fresh, keep on feeling excited, and just stay in the moment and don't get ahead of yourselves thinking what happens if we win or lose this. And going back, I don't really write things down, so I can't even really remember what said. Likely the same as what I said first day of training camp. Again, getting back to that, you know, the only time that I remember, and the only thing you really sort of think about, obviously, is when going into the last period of the game, when you're winning 1-0 and you're sitting in that room and you're thinking as a coach, I've got to say the right thing. You know, you're thinking, you're putting all this emphasis on what you do, when really that's pretty, again, pretty selfish. Like, almost players aren't even listening to you, as silly as that sounds. You know, that you know, they're just dealing with their own, dealing with nerves, dealing with excitement, just making sure that they are going through their step-by-step process and their eyes are on you. But I think really they're doing their own thing.
But then again, from the outside looking in, it might seem as if the head coach, I mean, everybody's looking at the head coach from the outside. It might seem that you're a tone setter. Do you ever consider yourself being a tone setter?
I don't consider myself anything. I just go about my day, go about my business. I enjoy being around the players. They give me energy. I really think that I feed off the players more than they feed off of me. And that's kind of why I like noisy locker rooms. I like vocal players. I like guys that are funny. I like guys that are full of life. And it doesn't mean I don't look for serious players. It doesn't mean that if a player is very serious and very quiet and very, you know, meticulous and all of these things, doesn't mean I don't appreciate them. I mean, they're just as intense as anybody else, but I don't want 20 guys. I don't like a quiet locker room. And our room, like I said, I went back and touched, and like Dalhousie was very, you know, I can hear our guys, and we have such strong voices that pretty much if I wrote down five or six things I wanted, or that's too many, if I say I had three things that I wanted to talk to him between periods, I'm not trying to listen in, but my office is right there. These guys are talking about it anyway. They've identified it before I even gone in the room.
Still, I want to remain with that game five for a little bit because for me personally, one of the greatest games I've ever covered. And if you had tacked on another period of play, we would have broken the record of the longest game ever played in the history of the league. At what point did you think, Jesus, it's not too bad? Did you ever think that?
Not too bad, like even if we lose or...
Just a great game of hockey.
No, I don't think so. I think you just stay in the moment. You're still trying to get the job done. Like you don't get outside of, like, you don't get too far down that path of, you know, okay, is this going to be the longest game? How many more minutes are we going to play? How you know, you're just, you know, you really want to make sure, just like the players, they don't want to be the one responsible for giving up a bad pass to have the goal scored. You don't want to get a bad line changer, get a bad, you know, call a line out, and then, you know, you get kind of a half broken line, or you got a penalty and or a power play and you're getting lines mixed up or calling. That's, you just don't want to be the reason for something good, bad happening.
I'll phrase it differently. How difficult is it in period number four, period number five, period number six to stay in the moment? Because that's what you hear most often.
Yeah, it's easier as a coach than it is as a player. I give players a lot of credit. And the coach just kind of, it's not... Like, to me, coaching, your most difficult days are practices. Like, your games are not really as difficult as preparing your team on the day-to-day basis. Once you've done your morning meetings or your meetings that you have, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's totally in the player's hands, but kind of your job is done. So you're kind of just, like I said, going through a very small checklist of things that make sure this is what I'm responsible for, kind of keep an eye on how much you're playing guys and do those things. So I think pretty simple, actually, stay in the moment. You're hoping maybe if there's anything, like I just want to get this over with. Like I want this, like I want to see my fate here, kind of, you know. I don't want to be at the rink for another 3 hours. Let's come on, boys.
But so where does this game rank? And you've seen so many games. You played so many games. I would assume there aren't a lot of triple overtime games that you played in or witnessed. Now you coached in one. Where does this game rank in your all-timers?
Well, certainly up at the top. I mean, any time an overtime game is played and then it goes more than one overtime, I'm trying to think as a player, likely two or three. I always found a way to let a bad goal in, I think, is to end it. But I think this would be certainly the longest game I was ever involved in. So, yeah, I would have to be up there.
Bozzano goes on to win in Salzburg. Series goes back for that final Game 7 showdown. Everybody knows on April 21st, 2023, there has to be a winner. And you just said, treat the last day of the year just exactly the same as the first day of the season and of the year. How difficult was that indeed with knowing Game 7?
Well, I just want to be clear. Like, I can't say, I mean, you can't come to Game 7 if you haven't done all the work and thing. I certainly am not going to sit here and say my first day in Corvara at training camp or my first exhibition game against Gardena or whoever it was is, has the same impact on me as it did that day. I mean, that, those days are difficult days. It's, well, it's hard as a player. I find very, very difficult as a player. I mean, the time seems to just drag on and you just wish the game was at 10 o'clock in the morning so you could play and get going. But on the other hand, there was not a lot. Like, you're not going in there and thinking, okay, I got to give us something really different for us to do. And like I said, the one thing I really appreciated about Salzburg, they had a game plan, and it wasn't full of, they weren't going to beat you by changing the way they play every game and come up with some special new system, and they just played their system and they were confident that they can play better than you at what they do. They want to play a heavy game. They want to be in on top of checks. They want to, you know, it's a pressure game and they want to be in good shape, all of those things. So you kind of knew what was coming. And I think the same thing can be said for us. Like, we don't try to come up with all these sneaky things. We just try to do what we do well. And so I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel in Game 7. We're just trying to, again, just get through the emotions, keep everybody at what I think should be the right level of intensity and get after it.
Promise we won't dwell on the past too much, but one last question regarding the Game 7, because I've already mentioned you were 12 minutes away from winning a championship. You led until minute 48, and Salzburg turned things around. If you were able to go back and maybe change one thing that would ensure, as difficult as it might sound or as impossible as it might sound, that would ensure that Bozzano is the team that hoists the trophy, not Salzburg, what would that be?
Yeah, I don't think too much. Like, I've gone over it. I didn't want to get too complicated before the third. You know, I'm always thinking, okay, if it didn't go right, what would you, could you redo it? Would you give them something more to think about? Would you, like, you really have to be careful in coaching. Like, things don't become self-fulfilling prophecies. Like, you can't say, okay, guys, we can't sit back. Whatever you do, we can't sit back. Next thing, the players are going, oh, man, we can't sit back. You know what I mean? You don't want to fill their heads with anything other than, look, you're here for a reason. You do things well. Just continue to do what you do. And every time you get a chance to play, just play as well as you possibly can, as hard as you possibly can within the structure of our hockey team. We're going to be okay. And you're not going in there and saying, boy, I need to really try to motivate these guys. You know, I mean, it's Game 7 of the third period. So, you know, I have a great assistant in Fabio. Fabio's really level-headed, really has a good feel on what's needed. Like, some, like, coaches really need a good partner. And it's hard sometimes because you're kind of in the eye of this hurricane, and you sometimes you don't think clearly, and if you can't run something by your assistant before you take it into the room, it's very difficult. So again, this is something Fabio and I, our personalities just met. We're good friends. We're great friends. I think we're both comfortable saying whatever we want, but we're both respectful. And Fabio knows what I need and what I don't need. And every time before I talk, I always ask him, and I respect his opinion. So that helps a lot.
I needed to get my facts straight here. Obviously, you led the game up until minute 51. Salzburg scoring the equalizer. basically a minute and 48 seconds to go, they score the championship winning goal. And even though they take the trophy from Bolzano to Salzburg and they record their eighth title in the league, obviously a record in the recent league history, after a couple of days, and you talked about the grief or the first stage of grief or the five beers of grief, whatever you want to call it. But after the dust settled a little bit, everybody was like, holy smokes, this was one of the greatest series we've ever seen. Did you have that moment where that kind of started to sink in, that even though you were only quote-unquote runner-ups, that this was a great two-week stretch of hockey?
Well, I thought it was I thought it was a great playoff the whole time. Like, I mean, we won game 7 the first round against Linz in overtime. Like that, like we were I thought that was really exciting and nerve-wracking. And then in Vienna, it was almost like a war of attrition. They just kept on losing player after player after player, and they kept on coming hard and hard and hard. And that was a great series. David Barr did a great job preparing their team and making adjustments. And I thought that that was great hockey too. And this one here, I knew as we were going along, because just because of the quality of the players that were involved, they knew it. Like, I knew it was pretty exciting, and you know, it really helps when I think, I don't have the exact number, but what do we have, 7,000 seats or something in here, and there's something like 40,000 ticket requests. So you knew that there was some hype going on and some excitement in the city, and that really helps a lot for the series. So at the end, I knew it was a great series.
Now, interestingly enough, the core has remained the same. The Italian core, most of the tenured import players. We're talking about Mike Halma. We're talking about Dustin Gaisley. We're talking about Christian Thomas going into his second year. We're talking about Brad McClure. So all these players who've gone through this experience that might have instilled, or even more instilled, that hunger for a championship. Is that something that you... Did you sense afterwards that there is this hunger, or even more of a hunger?
Yeah, but reality, you know, when you lose, they're like, you know, you're always saying, well, okay, next year it's one more win or one more, you know what? I don't look at it like we fell one win short or 2 minutes short or whatever. You know, I just think you look at it and say, okay, what did we do well? What are we going to bring back again? And let's, if it was running training camp or whatever it was, keep things fresh. And now keep things fresh. And I think this is a whole different year. I think the players should get a lot of, that had good seasons, should get confidence from that and stay hungry. You know what I mean? Like, you got to stay hungry. And that's... for us, it's like the whole thing here, Martin, is kind of haywire in the sense we're not even at 10 games of the season yet. You know what I mean? Like we're so, is this, you have to react accordingly. You know what I mean? Like you can't, I mean, panic and frustration and all of these things, it's not right. It's not the right response. It's, you know, if we're at 20, you know, halfway mark here of the season or something like that, yeah. And then it's like, holy God, what's going on? But I think now it's just, you know, play the right way, do the right things, get your rest, all the things that you need to do, and just get after it.
Two more games that will be played this week. Obviously tomorrow, before this conversation, sees the day of light on Wednesday against one of the surprises so far with the Pioneers. On Saturday, the Vienna Capitals will come in, a coach that you know well, who's now with the Capitals, and Mark Hapscheid. But what do you want to see from your team this week? We're always talking about winning habits and winning ways, but what do you want to see from your team to label it progress?
Well, I'm pausing because, you know, all parts of the game, I need to play well. I mean, but, you know, at the start, you know, defensively, it wasn't. When you look at the numbers, I think that there's a goal differential here of about not minus eight. But, you know, so there were some losses early where, you know, too many goals were given up. And then you look at the last handful of games, or last three games, I think there's been only three goals scored against them. And the big thing when you look at it is just goal, the production is down. So that's the one, number one thing. And the power play, it's a power play league. Like, it's especially team league, not just our league, every league is. And, you know, if you're sitting at 5 or 6%, it's really hard to win hockey games 5-on-5. It puts a lot of pressure on your penalty kill, and it puts a lot of pressure on you at 5-on-5. So, you know, the players are, but it's nothing to do with the system. It's nothing to do with the execution. It's just a matter of the executing, putting the puck in the net. When you're not scoring 5-on-5, it's really hard to say, oh, okay, I'm all of a sudden going to feel like I'm on top of the world here on 5-on-4, and I've watched the power play, and plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities. You know, the Pusterchal game, there must have been six good quality power play chances that I know these players are going to go in eventually. So for us, you know, the big challenge is don't make a whole bunch of changes. Making sure you go through the process of talking with the players and making sure they all feel as good as they possibly can about themselves, and reassure them that tomorrow's game is not the end of the world one way or another. It's not going to say, okay, everything is over now, we're fantastic, and if we're not fortunate enough to win, doesn't mean the season's over. So
funny that you mentioned those last three games where you conceded just three goals, but you managed to lose two. So again, mm-hmm. hockey's a funny game, and sometimes the
puck. Yeah, there's only two statistics that matter, and that's the final score and the attendance. That's it.
With that being said, Bolzano has never been shy in bringing in reinforcements during the year, and we've always marveled at the amounts of talent that Bolzano was able to bring in. Have you had talks with Dieter Knoll yet regarding maybe adding to the team, or is this the team that you want to get back on its winning ways first?
You know, there's two parts to that question. No, I just arrived here on Saturday, so I had yesterday, and I know Dr. Knoll was here, but I didn't get an opportunity to talk to him, so I'm assuming, like I said, this is going to be aired on Wednesday. I'm guessing I won't get a chance to speak. In regards to players and different, my philosophy as a coach is my team is what's in the locker room. I don't look at saying, I wish we had a different player, I wish we had this. We bring people in. Once there are players, there are players. And I coach, I believe, I do everything I possibly can to get that player to play his best to help the organization win. And I focus on that like crazy. And it wasn't always that way. I mean, I went through stages earlier on where you're drawing in, oh, I hear this player's coming. And like a lot of it was in the American Hockey League when players were moving up and down, and it wasn't so hard to get players up and down. And I'd get a phone call from the manager, and they would go, you know, George McPhee goes, I think we're sending so-and-so down. And, you know, out comes the pad, and you go, oh, God, he's going to be here in the power play, and he's going to be it. And then then something happens, and there's an injury, and the player doesn't come down. And now you're just so. I go here full bore on what we have, and I leave all of those decisions to people that make the changes. I never tell that, you know, it's get a player out or I want a different player or something.
Granted, there's a lot of hockey to be played and a lot of practices to be worked and everything that goes into it, but we're sitting in one of the most beautiful regions in the entirety of Europe. Apart from the game of hockey, you coaching and doing everything to get this team back on track, what were you most looking forward to when knowing that you'd come back for this season?
The players. Yeah, and the players.
Not the wine, not the coffee, the players.
No, I you know, it's funny. My wife said, look, this time just go, like, she was, I was saying, well, it's so beautiful and everything. She says, well, you don't really enjoy it anyway. And it's funny, you, like, I got back to one of my earlier answers. Like, this here is my purpose. The things that you're talking about likely end up costing me 10 grand to come here as a tourist and fly here and see all the things that are a fingertip away. But I like coming in the morning and being around my players. I like talking to my players. I like thinking about going home and thinking about what we talked about. And I enjoy being in with the staff, and I enjoy being in the rink, and I do all those things. It's not really something I occupy my mind with and going doing all these other things. So I really didn't be part of the process and say, as beautiful as this place is and as gorgeous as Italy is and how unbelievably fascinating every single area of this beautiful country is, I don't really use that as my motivator to come back. I wanted to come back here because of hockey and the players and the fans and anything involved in this hockey world that we have here in Northern Italy.
Couldn't have wished for a better way to round up this conversation. Coach, thank you so much for taking an hour out of your time. Just got over here. Wishing you all the best for the upcoming endeavors, and hope to see you soon again with Bolzano being playoff bound or finals bound.
You have an unbelievable ability to make people very comfortable and when you're talking to them, and it does well because we open up and way more than we normally do, and it's just like a conversation. So congratulations for that. Someone's raised you well or taught you well, and we continue your success.
Win today hockey. Oh,
kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn, und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.